You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
One night about 10 days ago, I was out giving a recital based on the very kind of music we use in this programme. There I was addressing the audience on the tiniest details of the lives of Gershwins and Kearns and company, without a note and without a falter. It must have created an illusion of omniscience on my part. The truth was I'd been preparing the thing for about a week, so why shouldn't I sound authoritative? Anyway, comes the interval and I retire to the dressing room to study my ad-libs for the second half. When a member of the audience walks in and says, "Can I ask you one short question?" "Yes," said I. "Now, for you," says the man, "it won't take more than a few seconds, but for me it's a big thing. I've been worrying the whole week and it's driving me mad. All I want to know is this. Who wrote Your Blase?" Well, I gave him a long look. Had he been sent as a saboteur by my bitterest enemies, he could not have done a better job. "Sir," I said after a moment's pause, "I could say this and I could say that. I could say I think your song may be the work of this or that. The truth is, I haven't the faintest idea who wrote Your Blase." Well, I think he believed me, and when I came home, I looked it up. Much good it did me. Your Blase, 1933, by Ord Hamilton and Bruce Sevier, neither of whom is listed in ASCAP. It's not a bad song, though.
You're deep, just like a chasm. You've no enthusiasm. You're tired and uninspired. You're blasé. Your day is one of leisure, in which you search for pleasure. You're bored when you're adored. You're blasé. The simple things of normal life are slowly passing by. You sleep, the sun is shining. You wake, it's time for dining. There's nothing new for you to do. Blasé. The sun is shining. You wake. It's time for dining. There's nothing new for you to do. You're blasé.
Your Blase, written by a pair unknown to me, Hamilton and Sevier. And if that chap's listening who asked me the question the other night, I was quite serious when I said I had no idea. People do tend to believe in something called the expert, the man who is never wrong. Now, the only experts in music I ever met were the self-appointed ones writing in the papers and magazines. On the subject of being believed, there is one story so daft that I'm always uneasy about telling it, for several reasons which will become obvious. In the long, long ago, I think more than 30 years ago now, I started doing a bit of lyric writing with some of the musicians I was working with. And one day, my collaborator and myself achieved something halfway coherent. And so we took it to the only publisher we knew, a man so ethical that, in the words of the classics, he could hide behind a spiral staircase. He said he would publish the song, and just to prove his honesty, he would pay us an advance on royalties of £1 each. Can you imagine that? Not one whole pound between us, but one each. Well, as it happened, he never published the song, and he still owes us the pound. But much more interesting is the fact that about 6 months after all this happened, I was sitting at home with a flu, listening to some new releases, when suddenly I heard someone playing our song. Impossible. But before I could get over my amazement, the girl started singing. Different words to mine, quite different. And damn it, rather better. Well, I telephoned my partner and it seemed we had composed a song that was already composed, thank you very much. What to do? We couldn't give our advance back because we'd never had it. We couldn't order all printed copies to be destroyed because there weren't any. So we said nothing. Just forgot about it, hoping that one day the law would catch up, not with us, but with the publisher, and send him back to Antarctica. Well, here is the recording that shattered me that afternoon.
If dreams come true, I'll be with you. I love that smile in your eyes. You seem a dream in disguise. In your caress, I find happiness.
Uncanny powers of telepathy there, playing a song I never even wrote until years after the recording date. Just purely out of interest, when I asked my partner how come, he said that when very, very young, he'd attended the cinema where they hired a pianist to play alongside the silent movies, and that melody must have stuck in his head subconsciously and come out again. Well, the answer to that is, as Jack Benny would say, because if Dreams Come True wasn't written until the talkies was invented, how could this story be true? Well, it all sounds like ancient history now. But during this same week, one of the heroes of this ancient history suddenly became topical for me. A very fashionable magazine asked if I would write a feature about a famous jazz figure I hadn't thought about for years. Well, why would they want the piece? Because later this spring, the old boy was actually coming over to this country to work. I then checked out the old boy's dates and found he was born on Christmas Day 1907, which puts him at a ripe 77 for his coming visit. I wonder if anybody can identify him from the list of his compositions, which include Zaz Zar Zaz, A Chinese Rhythm, Peck a Doodle Doo, The Jumpin' Jive, Are You Hep to That Jive, Boog It, Are You All Reet, and Geechee Joe. Obviously, we're dealing with a lord of language here. Mind you, this is one of his compositions.
Hey, folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a low-down hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest, toughest frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Honey, 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 honey. Chinatown, and he showed her how to kick the gong around. Ah, honey, honey. about the King of Sweden. He gave her things that she was needing. He gave her a home built of gold and steel, a diamond car with the platinum wheels. He gave her his townhouse and his racing horses. Each meal she ate was a dozen courses. Had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes. She sat around and counted them all 1,000,000 times.
Melina Mucha, conceived, composed and performed by the distinguished multilingualist Cabell Cab Calloway, man of many parts, some of which don't always seem to fit. As an eccentric singer specialising in a brand of gobbledygook loosely defined as jive talk, he reminds us of Oscar Wilde's remark about the trouble with being up to the minute is that in no time you're old-fashioned. As the leader of a big band, something much more formidable. The reason why I conceived a respect for Calloway when I was 15 was the obvious taste and affection he had for some of the greatest saxophone players in the world, particularly the late Leon Chewberry, who used to play the saxophone in the Calloway band with a fluency which sounded actually impossible to anybody who knew the instrument at all. Then there was the Cab Calloway, who did so brilliantly in the part of Sporting Life in the 1952 world tour of Porgy and Bess. There's Calloway, the band leader film star, mugging his way through lyrics that only a contortionist would look at. And now, in recent years, there's the Calloway who makes the occasional recording of forgotten material. For instance, an utterly obscure song from an ancient Henderson de Silva Brown show called Hold Everything, which actually had a show in it called Don't Hold Everything. The hit song was You're the Cream in My Coffee, but there was a minor piece involving a bit of Beatle crushing, which many years later, Cab Calloway revived in the company of Dorothy Loudon.
Some dancers are cold, they never take hold.
They seem to grow old in only a day.
Some dancers are hot in only one spot.
This one that I've got is hardly that way. It will reach dancing teachers in every nook.
It would try glorified and it too. This is the dance as hot as a coal. A top on the heels but good for the soul. You'll see your mom go round the hall doing the heel beat. Flappers and dancers are at it all night. Mothers and fathers have learned it for spite.
They give a hand to every band playing the heel beat. If you're the kind of flower that's known as a wall,
you still can be the feature at every ball.
If you get on to the dance as hot as a coal,
a dump on the heels but good for the soul. Get in the fun with everyone doing the heel beat.
If you're the kind of flower that's known as wall, you still can be the feature of every ball.
Cab Calloway and Dorothy Loudon and Heel Beat from the Henderson, the Silver and Brown show that made Burt Lahr a big star hold everything. When Calloway sings like that, I'm never quite sure how serious he is or how serious he means us to take him. But certainly, if he'd never been a band leader in Presario, he would have got by singing eccentric material. The only trouble was that even when he wasn't singing eccentric material, he used to make it sound a bit odd, almost as though he were winking the whole time to indicate that he couldn't really take it all too seriously. It was a bit like Fats Waller, only not quite so obvious. Here he is with his big band in 1946, and I've selected this song because it's so typical of the Glitterball Nights, where to go into a dance hall was the only way a young man could embrace a strange girl without getting arrested. There certainly is something a bit subversive about the way Calloway intones the words. I think if I were the composers, I'd be just a shade uneasy about it.
This isn't sometimes, this is always. This isn't maybe, this is always. This is love, the real beginning of forever. This isn't just midsummer madness, a rising glow, a moment's gladness. Yes, it's love. I knew it from the day we met. You tied a string around my heart. How can I forget you? With every kiss I know that this is always. Forget you. With every kiss I know that this is always.
This is Always, vocal by the band leader Cab Calloway, with Ike Quebec on tenor saxophone, and the date in that performance is 1946. Now, Calloway will be back in this country during the spring, but not, I think, with his band. But whatever he does, Calloway won't be a bore. He was never that. His band-leading days go back to 1928, which may just about be the current world record. A short interlude now to acknowledge the revival of an old musical in the West End of London. Now, the first thing to remember about Me and My Girl is that it has no connection with the old standard song For Me and My Girl. The show, which had a freakishly long run in the West End of London in the years running up to the outbreak of the last war, had a story about a Lambeth lad who is suddenly tested by the blandishments of an aristocratic position, a family tree, and all the rest of the equipment that used to go with a long history of genteel pillage. The revival is not quite the same show, because the policy has been adopted, which is usually adopted these days, that is to buttress the score with other songs from other sources written by the same composer. The most brilliant example of this is 42nd Street, of course, which bursts with outstanding material borrowed from other themes that Dubin and Warren worked on. In this case, the producers of Me and My Girl have slipped in a few successes of the show's composer, Noel Gay. But of course, whatever they do, Me and My Girl will forever be associated with one song, a dance craze which shook the world, so much so that it even reached America, where a name like the Lambeth Walk must have meant precious little. Even so, one of the great American bands recorded it. And what I love about this airshot, dated December the 1st, 1938, is the extraordinary audience reaction once it's over. If you listen carefully to the behaviour of this very large studio audience, it sounds like one hand clapping. ¶¶ The Lambeth Walk and the band's identity there was given away by the effortless lyrical clarinet playing, which could only have been achieved by Artie Shaw. A couple of weeks ago, I played a Beatrice Lilly recording of a song called He Was a Gentleman, filled with the kind of very obvious double entendres which used to be fashionable in the nightclubs and cabaret acts of the pre-war world. Now, here's another of the same sort, written by a pair whose names mean nothing to me. It smells a little bit of the nom de plume syndrome, because the writers are called Doe and Dogues. Whoever they are, the joke is not really what you call profound, but it's delivered in such a succulent vocal style in this recording that it's made to sound musical.
This is a sad and tragic story of a young girl about to go out on her first party. As it's her first time out alone among gentlemen, her mother calls her into the room and says, "Now, Minnie, you're dressed up in all your finery, and you look beautiful. You're going to run into a lot of temptation, and I want you to remember everything I've always told you. Oh, my Minnie, and above all, my darling daughter, I want you to be very, very careful." But Minnie had to go and lose it at the Astor. She didn't take her mother's good advice. Now there aren't so many girls today who have one, and she never let it go for any price. They searched the place from penthouse to the cellar, in every room and underneath each bed. Once they thought they saw it laying on a pillow, but they found it belonged to someone else instead. Oh, Minnie had to lose it at the Astor. She didn't know exactly whom to blame. Now she couldn't say just how or when she lost it. She only knew she had the thing whenever she came there. They questioned all the bellboys and the porter. The chef appeared to be the guilty guy. And the doorman acted so suspicious. But you know what happened? He coyly said, "I'm sure it wasn't I." Oh, that poor Minnie lost it at the Astor. It nearly killed her mother and her dad. Now they felt as bad about the thing as she did. After all, darling, it was the only one that she had. Well, they just about completed all the searching when the chauffeur walked up with it in his hand.
What?
All they did was stand and gape. There was Minnie's sable cape. And she thought that she had lost it at the Astor. If she had, who knows? I don't know.
Pearl Bailey telling the sad story of the missing double entendre, which predictably turns out in the end to be a single one. An anniversary that turns up this week belongs to a man called Russell Crouse, a one-time journalist who drifted into the theatre and then the musical theatre when he collaborated with Howard Lindsay. The pair of them wrote maybe the biggest hit of all time, The Sound of Music. But some of their earlier work is perhaps of more interest to connoisseurs of musicals. For instance, they worked on a show in 1936, which I should have thought would have ended their careers forever. What they came up with, these two brilliant men, was a story about an heiress with a very special identifying mark on a very special place on her anatomy. Apparently, when she was four, she had sat on a hot waffle iron. So there you are. The composer for this elevated romp was Cole Porter, and he got so fed up with the plot that at one point he walked out and refused to have anything more to do with anybody. Eventually he cooled down, and that left just one fight to resolve, and that was between the two stars over the billing. The stars were Durante and Ethel Merman, each of whom insisted on top billing, and eventually some genius came up with the idea of a cross with each name printed diagonally on one spar of the cross. The character portrayed by Miss Merman is, believe it or not, called Nails O'Reilly Duquesne. I suppose they thought that was funny too. The comic relief was provided by Bob Hope. And one of the more memorable songs in the score is this one. In the production, it went on for chorus after chorus, telling a kind of story of two lives. But in its popular, truncated form, all we usually get is this much.
I feel a sudden urge to sing the kind of ditty that invokes the spring. So control your desire to curse while I crucify the verse. This verse I've started seems to me the ten antitheses of melody. So to spare you all the pain, I'll skip the darn thing and sing the refrain. Young, the skies are clear, and if you wanna go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, 'cause so am I. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go, so please be sweet, my chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's dilemmit, it's deluxe, it's delovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go, so please be sweet, my chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's dilemmit, it's deluxe, it's delovely.
Ella Fitzgerald, It's Delovely, from the 1936 Porter show Red, Hot and Blue. And anybody who's curious to know how Porter thought up such a verbal curiosity as delovely, the answer is apparently he didn't. Very generously, Porter admitted that the word was coined by his very close friend and travelling partner, Monty Woolley, who maybe should have known better because before he took up acting, he'd been a teacher of English. An anniversary I missed out last month through sheer pressure of space was one of the wittiest and most tuneful shows of the post-war period. The lyricist Yip Harburg, finding that the climate in Hollywood was beginning to turn sour on anybody who had ever expressed any opinion about anything, decided to return to his first love and write for Broadway, where they were still old-fashioned enough to judge a man by his work. Harburg, fascinated by the petty hypocrisies and frauds being played on the general public, wrote a salty fable about gold and what it can do for people. His partner was a man, I think, who once did one of the most extraordinary things ever credited to a songwriter. The show that Harburg wrote in 1947 was called Finian's Rainbow, and after it had settled in for a 700-performance run, the composer of the melodies, Burton Lane, wrote to a New York music teacher, asking for instruction in composition, theory and harmony, to prepare him for enrollment at Juilliard. But Burton Lane was far beyond the ordinary academic considerations. He was a natural, a child prodigy, a youthful wonder whose first songs for Broadway were written when he was 18 years old. Although Lane was a veteran by the time Finian's Rainbow turned up, he was still only 35 years old. Into that show, he and Harburg put some of their most durable work. Listen to this wonderful display of verbal trickery, which Harburg puts into a pretty waltz that Lane wrote for him. The plot situation is very simple. The singer is supposed to be a sex-obsessed leprechaun.
Oh, my heart is beating wildly, and it's all because you're here. When I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. Every femme that flutters by me is a flame that must be fanned. When I can't fondle the hand I'm fond of, I fondle the hand at hand. My heart's in a pickle, it's constantly fickle,
and not to particle, I fear. When I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. What if they're tall or tender? What if they're small or slender? Long as they've got that gender, I surrender. Always I can't refuse them. Always my feet pursue them, long as they've got a bosom, I woos them. As I'm more and more a mortal, I am more and more a case. When I'm not facing the face that I fancy the face I face. For Sharon, I'm caring, but Susan, I'm choosing, I'm faithful to whosin is here. When I'm not near the girl I love,
near the girl that I love, one of the wittiest songs of its kind ever written. But then Harburg was on what they call a hot when he wrote Finian's Rainbow, burning with ambition to say what he felt about society and laughing at the stultifying conservatism of Middle Belt America. He wrote a lyric which took a lot of sly digs at entrenched attitudes. The Begat, one of the most brilliant songs from Finian's Rainbow. Harburg was not a man who had any illusions about show business. For example, in a review called Crazy Quilt, he had the chorus girls come on and recite in their best dumb style the following observations.
Here come the same sweet showgirls you see in every show. We're mortified by Schubert and we're glorified by Flo. We aren't wise or comical, we're purely anatomical. The feature unattired for you tired so-and-so.
This big hip show they planned on would have no leg to stand on if it weren't for the golden calf men worship through the halls.
These lights and stage machinery, this ballroom and this scenery is nothing but a picture frame.
So are these.
And downs.
And those.
The chorus girls in a show called Crazy Quilt and Harburg at his most sardonic. And that was a prominent side of him, but when he wanted to write a passionate love song, he could do that too, especially when aided by Burton Lane. In Finian's Rainbow, there were two songs which went on to become great standards.
A secret, I've got a little secret. A secret, a secret kind of secret. I'm aching for to shout it to every daffodil and tell the world about it. In fact, I think I will. This isn't love. The whole world is crazy. If this isn't love, I'm daft as a daisy. With moons all around and cows jumping over, there's something amiss. And this isn't love. I'm feeling like the apple on top of William Tell. With this I cannot grapple because you're so adorable.
isn't love. Then winter is summer. If this isn't love, my heart needs a plumber. I'm swinging on stars. Your hand if this is love.
If This Isn't Love, a song whose swooping melody is ideally suited to the vocal style of Sarah Vaughan. And to close, another song at least as good and at least as original. What a show Finian's Rainbow was. What an inquest we could hold on its London production if we were mischievous enough to do such a thing. Broadway run, 725 performances. London run, 55. Anyway, here's one of the songs sung by somebody who was in neither the Broadway nor the London production, but should have been in both.
I look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the skies. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night blazing their light can't hold a candle to your razzle dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry, wanna croon, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, old devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love.
Frank Sinatra, Old Devil Moon, from the Yip Harburg Burton Lane classic musical Finian's Rainbow. And that's it. See you same time next week.
To your razzle dazzle, you've got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry, wanna croon, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, old devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love. How it blinds me with love.
You've You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.